Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth. Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. When the 9/11 Memorial Museum opened in May, there was more fury over its gift shop than its design. Museum administration claimed that the shop would generate revenue to support an estimated $65 million in annual operating costs. Still, families of those killed and others found it crass and insensitive. Among the keepsakes that raised eyebrows and ire, an FDNY rescue dog vest for your pup, survivor tree earrings, a cheese plate in the shape of the United States, and one item called a darkness hoodie. As offensive as it is to some, the impulse to memorialize, and perhaps profit, has been part of the fabric of American culture since the Revolution. Brady Carlson, host of All Things Considered on NHPR, joined me shortly after the opening of the 9/11 Museum to discuss our historical impulse to commemorate. I asked him when, in American history, we first saw people using tragedy as an opportunity to hawk their wares.
As far back as there's been tragedy and as far back as there's been wares, honestly, I mean, you think of funerary art, art representing death or remembrance. I mean, that goes back into ancient times. And it's not really a huge stretch, I suppose, for someone to decide that they could make a few dollars by selling their funerary art. In early America, there was a very popular series of products based on a picture called The Apotheosis of Washington. It's basically showing George Washington after death being welcomed into heaven by a group of angels. And you'd find this on prints and on water jugs and all over the place, not to mention black ribbons or memorial medals and coins. I mean, the list goes on and on. And it's really kind of stayed that way ever since.
Other funerary trinkets of American presidents come to mind?
Probably my favorite is one that I saw at the tomb of James A. Garfield, who was our 20th president and the second one to be assassinated. This wasn't really a memorial item. It was put out, I think, in the 1920s or 30s, but it was by a company called the Garfield Tea Company of Brooklyn. He's from Ohio. But it was a laxative tea. So they have this incredibly disturbing slogan called "Flush Your Bowels with Garfield Tea." And what exactly this was intended to do, I'm not entirely sure. But it was probably one of those cases where here's a very well-known figure. Here's a chance to sell some products. We put the two together and off we go.
Location, location, location. Well, even at the site of the World Trade Center, while the buildings were still smoldering, people were selling American flags and Statue of Liberty hats, and people were taking photos of themselves with buildings in the background. What is behind this impulse to be in that place, to acknowledge that you were there?
I think that's really what it is. We like souvenirs, frankly, and so we like to have something that we can hold in our hands or something that we can display at home to remind us of a particular experience that we had, whether it was being part of a major news event, good or bad, or something that has personal resonance, or simply something that we experienced, like going through a museum. That's why they all have gift shops, because people do buy things. They like to have something that they can take with them. And there's a term that I heard in particular with the 9/11 Museum. I read it in Maclean's, and the writer Ann Kingston called it catharsis consumerism, that buying things is one of the primary ways that we commemorate major events. And there's a cultural component to it as well. And you think of what happened in the aftermath of the Boston Marathon bombings. The Boston Strong t-shirts were initially put together as a way to raise money for the one fund,
right,
for the victims. But on top of that, it became a way for this group of people, the city or the community of the greater Boston area, to sort of cope with this horrific event, and also a way that people could participate and take part in.
It's a common cause.
A common cause, exactly.
Yeah. Well, all right, let's look at Gettysburg. 50,000 people killed. Yet it's like this living museum. There are people wandering around there with costumes and loads of items in the gift shop that one might find questionable. What are some of the things that are on offer?
Well, I mean, it's worth pointing out that Gettysburg, by the way, is, aside from the official gift shop and the official battlefield itself, is this sprawling tourism place, not even just in the actual Gettysburg area, just driving in or out on either direction, you'll find tourism-related stuff everywhere. Nothing attracts a an entrepreneur like a crowd, I guess. But you will find everything from a Robert E. Lee nutcracker. What is it, $200, I think?
$200 for that. But we should note that the regular troop member waving a flag is $109, and the colored troop member, $99.99.
Well, rank has its privileges, among other things. But there are Civil War officer costumes for kids. I remember seeing play money, lots of historical toys, the kinds of things that 19th century kids might have played with. And then there are T-shirts that, with slogans of all manner of tastes, like no rifles, no swords, just balls. you know, it really is a case of when you get that many people coming, and thousands of people come to Gettysburg every year, you get people who are coming for a lot of different reasons. Some are very interested in the history, and they're very emotionally connected to the people and the events of those days. And then you have other people who sort of vaguely remember the name Gettysburg and think it's kind of cool to have been in some place where something important happened, and why not do a little shopping while you're there?
How about the World War II Museum now? Let's put this in perspective compared to Gettysburg. Battle deaths, 15 million. Civilian deaths, 45 million. A long time in the making. What can you buy there to commemorate this historic event?
Well, you could play World War II Monopoly. You could have all manner of military vehicles take the place of the thimble or the dog or the wheelbarrow. There's a D-Day lighter gift set. There are GI helmets for kids. I've seen museums where you can buy military-style rations of every kind. And good eating, right?
And lucky strikes.
Exactly.
Well, the Monopoly game, I just want to read a little bit of the description. Honor, courage, victory. Honor the brave men and women who face the global spread of tyranny when you play America's We're All in This Together, a World War II edition of America's favorite game, Monopoly. So, you know, I guess a part of it, the tackiness may come in the merchandising and in this case, the copywriting.
And sometimes the intent can be different from the outcome. I mean, I always grew up thinking G.I. Joe dolls were kind of a crass cash-in on very honorable people serving the country. And yet, we heard this week when the creator of G.I. Joe dolls passed away, you heard his story and he said, this is a way that we can bring into popular culture a way to remember that there are people in the world who are trying to protect us every day, that they are serving and willing to risk their lives to do that. And that kind of turned my head around about that. I had no idea that that was the actual impetus behind G.I. Joe.
I'm joined by NHPR's Brady Carlson, and we're talking about the controversy surrounding the gift shop at the 9/11 Memorial Museum in New York City. It turns out that tone-deaf keepsakes have been a part of American history for a long time. But I guess the other decider here is when is it too soon? Not a lot of time has passed since September 11th, 13 years. It's still vivid in the memory of many people, unlike Gettysburg or Pearl Harbor, for example.
And I would bet that that changes what you would see in a gift shop. Had there been a Gettysburg gift shop 10 years after the battle in 1873, you wouldn't have found some of those nutcrackers or the playing cards or the Abraham Lincoln Growler kids buzzsaw that you might find in some of these shops in the Gettysburg area today.
Let me just mention how freaked out we were about the buzzsaw. I mean, what did they use the buzzsaw for in the Civil War? It's just not a good picture. But, you know, okay, yeah, Gettysburg does feel like ancient history to us. But, of course, kids who weren't born on September 11th or were grade school kids are going to be finding out about what happened there in a very, very different way. I guess this is the churn of history in the same way that I look at stuff at the World War II Museum and find, you know, Hawaiian shirts with bombers on them to be of questionable taste.
And I think that people who have emotional connections to these events are going to look at them differently than people who were born afterwards and are having a much more intellectual conversation about it. There is an argument being made, and it's always made, that really what you're doing, yes, you're buying a trinket, but you are in a way supporting this museum and you are supporting an effort to try and tell the story of this museum, and you can go back and forth on that. But what you likely will find is that the museums will end up with more revenue with a gift shop selling some of these questionable items.
And then people clearly buy them.
And people, well, we'll see about the cheese plate, but these items would not end up on the shelves if people didn't buy them.
It's not just the passage of time, but of course it's how we communicate. This is something you and I have spoken about a lot. The Oklahoma City National Memorial and Museum, now this was commemorating the most similar events to 9/11 in recent history because it was an attack on U.S. soil. One article that I read, there were no cries of anguish when the Oklahoma City Museum's gift shop opened. But it was also noted that this was pre-internet and social media days. So maybe people just weren't weighing in?
That's a really interesting question, because if you walk through a gift shop, you're walking through kind of as yourself. You're not necessarily broadcasting to the world that you find the fact that they have one particular trinket or other to be offensive or in poor taste. Whereas now you can, and if one person happens to have their opinion catch fire and several tens of thousands of other people start to have the same reaction and say, wait a minute, I don't think that's okay, then you might have a much bigger question, a much bigger debate on your hands. For what it's worth, the items that I saw on the online shop for the Oklahoma City Memorial were pretty low key. There were no cheese plates that I could find.
There was the one rescue dog.
There was the little rescue dog plush toy, which outside of the context is absolutely adorable.
Well, lest I sound like I'm completely against this, when I went to the Holocaust Museum in Berlin, it was such a moving experience that I picked up something. You know, it was a postcard, but it was just a photograph of something or somebody that I wanted to remember. So I don't by any means want to come off as, you know, boy, this is a tacky, horrible thing to do. Gift shops are just a part of the thing. But is this a particularly American thing, do you think?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, we certainly do tend to lead the way on these kinds of trinkets. This is a society that prides itself on its entrepreneurial spirit and participation. Then again, there are, as you said, there are gift shops at the Anne Frank House. There are gift shops at Holocaust museums all over the world. There are gift shops at the Hiroshima Monument in Japan. So there's just something very human, boundaries aside, about finding a way physically and maybe virtually going forward of saying, I was here, this meant something to me, and I want a way to keep that tangible as I go forward and go on with the rest of my life.
Well, Memorial Day was this past weekend, and many people, you know, head to the beach or the barbecue, long weekend. And there's a lot of criticism about that, that we're forgetting the essential meaning of Memorial Day. Do you think that will eventually be the same with 9/11?
It's certainly possible. I mean, you've seen, I think what you've seen is that at least in this first generation, when those of us who remember it very vividly are still here and still part of that debate about the meaning of the day and how it should be commemorated, the core memory of the day is still there. But you're already starting to see it evolve here, even in this first generation, with people who are still around and still remember it very vividly. You see the National Day of Service, and you see these debates about, well, in an election year, is it appropriate for candidates to campaign on September the 11th, or is it not? And that debate is going to continue going forward. But with Memorial Day, what you've seen is the core meaning is still there, but there are these other meanings that have been hung on there as well. And a lot of that is due to the economic impulse that's always part of culture. Tourism organizations who say this is really a perfect way to kick off summer. It's an event that we're all familiar with. It's an event that we all in some way participate in. And so we will, whether or not they intend to take away from that actual meaning of Memorial Day or not, it adds this other layer of meaning on top. And so the day tends to evolve rather than completely change in one direction or another.
Conversation there with Brady Carlson from May. That was shortly after the opening of the September 11th Memorial Museum. Brady is host of All Things Considered on NHPR. We've compiled a slideshow of some of the most tone-deaf historical keepsakes. You'll find that on our website, wordofmouthradio.org. Since its opening 3 years ago, the 9/11 Memorial site has had more than 11 million visitors. Up next, we're going to consider this. In a world of virtual wonders, is it still meaningful to stand in the actual physical spot where history, no matter the circumstance, was made? We'll explore that when Word of Mouth continues.